Hello, I'm Marcelan, and thanks for the invite. I would be talking about this recent work on Gibbs sampling of energy functions and continuous domain, which we did recently with my supervisor. Let me first define the problem. So the problem is that we have a function which, the function E, which we call it either potential or energy, and it's from the d-dimensional Euclidean space to the real numbers, and the goal is to sample from a distribution, which is written here as e to the minus energy divided by z, and we don't know what z is. So the goal is to prepare samples from this distribution by making as many, as few queries as I could to this, to an oracle for this energy function. And we also write this, denote this distribution by G. And as an instance, if we pick E to be the norm squared, we get this Gaussian distribution. Cool. So let's have a look at the motivations for this problem. I think this problem is, well, it's inherently interesting, but it also has cool motivations from machine learning. In energy-based models, like into training of energy-based models, what we have is that, we want to maximize the log likelihood. And when we take the derivative of that, it has partition function in it, which we don't want to compute. It's a hard, it's computationally difficult to find. And so we write it in this format, and we see that, there is this expectation value. So now if we could generate samples from G, we have a Gibbs sampler, we could, so that we could estimate this, vector-valued function up to some good error, we get a good, we could now do our gradient descent algorithm in the training of these energy-based models. Yeah. Cool. Now let's have a look at how these algorithms for Gibbs sampling work usually. They usually consider the stochastic differential equation written up there, like d by t equals something. It's well studied, and people know that under mild condition over the energy function, we get a solution to this SDE, meaning yt, is a stochastic process, which is ergodic, and has a unique stationary distribution, which is the Gibbs state. So it's cool. If you run this stochastic differential equation, if you have a method for doing it, at t equals infinity, you get a sample from the Gibbs state. And that's the idea. And if you want to have an intuition of what's going on in this SDE, you could think of it as, the first term is sort of doing a gradient descent step, so it's going a little bit towards the minimum, a local minimum of the function. And then this dw term, which is actually a white noise, is jumping this particle around. So that's how dw term is actually the term that's giving us the stochastic property in this equation. However, the question is, how long should we go for? Like, how long should this process run for? So that y at that time is a good approximation to a Gibbs sample. So this question has been answered in this in the sense of these relations, meaning that if we denote the distribution of the stochastic process by rho sub t, rho sub t is actually the marginal distribution of the process, like rho sub t is the density corresponding to the stochastic process at time t. And when we divide it by the distribution at time infinity, which is the actual Gibbs distribution, we would like to get some number around 1, right? We would like these two distributions to be identical. So if we look at the deviation from 1, we see that the norm satisfies this relation. Norm goes exponentially fast to 0 if and only if some functional inequality is satisfied, the second line, which people call the Poincaré inequality. Let's have a look at this inequality. On the left-hand side, it says the variance of the function f should be less than or equal to some expectation value of the derivative. Derivative is sort of controlling how much your function is going up and down. Like how much is it changing? And the variance is also another measure of change in the function. What Poincaré inequality says is that if the variance is bounded by the norm of gradient over this Gibbs distribution, then we have a fast convergence for the stochastic process we just saw. And this second equation should hold for almost every function. So the technical condition is that f should be inside L2 of rho infinity. Hence, it's not an easy condition to check usually. However, it's a good characteristic of this convergence. OK, a few facts about this Poincaré inequality. So the first line is just rewriting the inequality. Firstly, any strongly convex function satisfies a Poincaré inequality. And secondly, this KLX conjecture is trying to say that the strong part is not maybe needed, like every convex function should satisfy it very informally. And there are also some non-convex functions known that satisfy a Poincaré inequality. The thing is, if you have a convex function, you perturb it a little bit, it is still convex. It still satisfies a Poincaré inequality, although it's not convex. And recently, people have proved that unimodal distributions, like if you have a, if your energy function has only one minimum, and it's a strict minimum, meaning that the second derivatives are all positive, you also have a Poincaré inequality, which is independent from dimension. Cool. So what do people do classically is that they discretize that stochastic differential equation or, say, Langevin dynamics. And they're also a little bit careful in doing so, in a sense that just naively discretizing time and space would not give you a good Gibbs sampler. However, there's been mathematical guarantees in the for the classical algorithms to achieve fast Gibbs samplers, to quickly achieve Gibbs samplers, meaning with a small complexity in terms of the error parameters and stuff. But the conditions that they have is, for example, being strongly convex, or they have some isoperimetric inequalities always. So, yeah. You do need your energy function to be well-behaved if you want a good classical Gibbs sampler. OK. Now I would like to talk a little bit about periodic Langevin dynamics, because that's what this work is about. Well, if you take that y sub t, which we defined before, and you just wrap it, meaning that you shift it, take the mod, and then, meaning that you project it onto it onto the fundamental domain of a torus, you will get another stochastic process. And you could prove that it's Markovian and it's ergodic with the unique distribution being the Gibbs distribution. unique stationary distribution being the Gibbs one if your energy function is periodic and smooth. So good properties still hold. And then we prove this proposition saying that, every periodic Langevin dynamics satisfies a Poincaré inequality. And we also show that the satisfaction of Poincaré inequality is still equivalent to a fast convergence on a torus. Okay, let's have a look at the algorithm we propose. I would like to first talk a little bit about the main result. Very informally, what we have is that we have a Gibbs sampler which has polylogarithmic dependence on the precision parameter. So it makes queries where it makes queries to the energy function to obtain a sampler, to obtain a sample from the Gibbs distribution up to the total variation distance of epsilon. However, the dependence on epsilon is polylogarithmic. And we should point out that every other algorithm that we are aware of and makes a polylogarithmic dependence on the precision parameter assumes isoperimetric inequalities or strongly convexity. Okay, let's have a look at the techniques we had. Firstly, if X, which was defined by taking the shifted mod of Y, the S mod is here to represent the shifted mod. Then we get this forward Kolmogorov equation for the distribution. So rho of X and T is the probability distribution of the particle being at position X at time T. And it is evolving through this equation, which is also known as the Fokker-Planck equation. And what we do is that we discretize it first in space. So we get something like the blue equation. And we do so by approximating the derivatives using a sort of, say, finite difference method, but it has its own name. People call it Fourier pseudospectral method, which is like you take the Fourier of the function, you multiply it with the momentum operator with k, and then take the Fourier inverse, which is equivalent to applying a momentum operator. And then we use quantum algorithms for solving ordinary differential equations to find this distribution at very long times. Okay. And a quick detour here, it seems for now a little bit irrelevant, but I promise it would be relevant. So let's define a set of functions called semi-analytic functions. We say that a function is semi-analytic if it satisfies this, which informally means that the nth derivative of your function is well-bounded. Nth derivative could go to infinity, but it has a sort of controlled growth. And what we show is that every analytic function is semi-analytic, and hence the name. Cool. And why do we use Fourier transformation? Something cool here. So assume you have a function. This function, which looks like a Gaussian distribution on the torus, it's a periodic function, which is actually e to the cosine x. And you could take few points on it, pick here, I think it's 5 or 6. Few points on this function. And the thing is, when you pick only few points, you lose the information about all the other points. Hence, that is only having a state vector, for example, ktun, which is the normalized version of this red dots, it looks sort of difficult to find a sampler which is sampling well from this actual blue distribution. However, we show that if your function u was a semi-analytic function, then having a state psi, which is close to the discretization of u, you could sample from the actual u squared in this complexity. Like, this is the overhead The overhead is, sorry, this is the error. Like, if you're delta close to the ket U, then you could run some algorithm and find a sampler from U squared whose distance from the actual U squared is this. So you could see that the error, the additive error here, is really small, like exponentially small in terms of n. Yeah, and the gate complexity of this is d, and is O of d log 1 over epsilon. Also, you could show that the derivatives behave really nice, meaning that if you approximate the del f here is the Fourier approximated derivative. So if you approximate the derivative using the Fourier transformation or and compare it to the actual derivative on the discretization points, you could show that the difference is exponentially small. And this is a rather less informal version of the actual theorem, where you do also see these semi-analyticity parameters here, which describes the actual query complexity of this algorithm. And also here you see the see that the gate complexity differs is larger than the query complexity by this factor. So the main thing is that when you use these Fourier methods and you know that your function behaves nicely, for example, it's just analytic, that's all you need to know, then you could do cool stuff with it. You could obtain polylogarithmic, you could obtain algorithms or could obtain high precision algorithms. And let me also talk a little bit about the future directions. So one could consider extending this work to the outer compact domains, which, for example, that this paper in 2020 does it for the product of n-dimensional spheres. They do it for one-dimensional spheres, which is the torus, like S1 cross S1 cross S1. Or one could also try estimating partition functions, or one could try algorithms for sampling from convex bodies. And I should also mention that these are like very recent results trying to solve very similar problems. And another thing to mention is that our algorithm does not make first order queries. Like, it doesn't require having access to an oracle for the derivatives, to the derivatives of the energy function. It just requires an oracle for the values of the energy function, which is, well, usually classical algorithms do assume having a first order method, and we don't. Yeah, that's it. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Asala. Questions?
Hi, thanks for that talk. I was wondering if you could clarify the role of the oracle in your work. So specifically, one thing that I've found is that oracle-based proofs, they don't explore the complexity of the oracle itself in real implementation. So was that something that you looked into or have some sort of like qualitative understanding of whether this oracle will introduce computational overhead to actually performing this in a real?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. So firstly, where the oracle comes from, the oracle is sort of, well, we this paper that Barry, this paper of Barry et al. In 2017 gives you a complexity based, gives you a query complexity where the queries they're using, they're querying this L operator here, and you could build an oracle for L using oracle for E. So if you have an energy function, you could, yeah.
Because we know the complexity of L and
yes.
how to build E.
Yeah.
That could be figured out.
Yeah, that's the that's how we get the that's how the oracle is actually used. And secondly, yeah, that's a good question. Like, there is a lot in it's a good question. That is it actually okay to assume that we have a quantum oracle for energy function? And yeah, that's not something that I have looked at. Yeah, I'm not sure about that part.
Much.
More questions?
Robert, right here.
Yeah, thank you so much for the nice talk. Just curious, like here you're talking about quantum algorithms.
Yes.
What is the query complexity for the classical algorithm? Like, are there some kind of advantage here, or?
Yep, that's a good question. Well, the main advantage is this epsilon parameter. So, in the classical regime, when people analyze these algorithms, they always assume that they have a strongly convex function, or the function satisfies a log solvable of inequality, which is not something we have assumed here. So, firstly, in terms of assumptions, and secondly, in terms of this precision parameter, there are classical algorithms who do achieve polylogarithmic, but still, they do have assumptions that we don't.
I see. So, do you think, like, if I try to, like, use your insights here in order to develop a classical algorithm for sampling from these analytic periodic potential, you think it would just not work, or you don't see a way to make it work, or?
Yeah. Well, I tried it actually. The thing is, when there are a few things. Firstly, is that we are using this Fourier transforms, and Fourier transforms work really well in the quantum. You could take Fourier transforms efficiently in the quantum world, but it's not the case in the classical world, and that's why I think this periodic structure is helping us, and. The other thing is that, just to give a short answer, I do not think it is easy to find a classical algorithm just based on this, like, you take this and make it classical. I don't think it's an easy job. Yep.
So in that case, you would expect that maybe there will be some exponential blow up in, like, the dimension of the periodic
yep.
space? I see. Do you think there's a way to prove that? Like, because this is query complexity, right? So
it is a query complexity.
Like,
yeah.
Do you think one could construct an explicit model of that and then show there's actually an exponential advantage?
Well, that's the thing. It might be possible. I just think it is not easy.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks for the talk. And this question might be a bit ambiguous, but you know that in classical Gibbs sampling, you have to do Gibbs sampling like a certain number of times till the solution converges.
Yeah.
And only then you get like samples from a converged distribution. So when you do like Gibbs sampling using a quantum algorithm, does the number of step decrease?
Oh, that's a good question. No, there is no speed up in terms of the time. So still, you cannot do better. Yeah, the query complexity is linear in terms of time. Like, if you want to solve this ODE quantumly, you still need order T queries to your L operator. So, yes, there is no advantage in terms of the time.
Thanks.
Do you have more questions?
Yeah, thanks. So in the start, you mentioned about training energy-based models using samples of this, right? Have you tried combining this with that? With neural network training, basically?
Oh, this, I don't think it's a You mean like implement this and use it for training an energy-based model?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think that's, yeah, that's doable, like, at least for now, yeah.
Oh.
Else? Well then, let's thank Aswalan again.